Welcome to Rewind, the book club where we reread old YA books and tell you our unfiltered opinions with lots of wine involved. We're your hosts. I'm Sarah Jones Dittmeyer.
And I'm Emily Cavender.
And today we're reading, or we're going over, the gender swapped version of Twilight.
Which I would just like to say, I've been calling the gender swap Twilight book for years, and I didn't realize it had its own title until I reread it today. The Life and Death is the title of this book, which honestly, like, I'm a little upset that it didn't follow the pattern of all the other ones. Like, there's nothing to do with the moon or the sun in it, so.
Yeah, that's true, but I guess there is life and death in it, technically.
Yeah, still just boring.
What are you drinking?
That's a great question. The front of the bottle just says Bovale or Boval. I'm not really sure. And then the back of the bottle is a novel. But what I'm gathering is that it's made in Virginia, but the grapes are imported from Spain. So it's like kind of a Spanish wine from 2018. As per usual, it's a rosé. Rosé is my jam.
So I am drinking a red, but it is not from Spain today.
I didn't even know you knew red wine existed when it didn't come from Spain.
I do. The other red wine that I like is from California. It's a 2018 and it is an Imagery Pinot Noir. Highly recommend.
For a second, I thought you were going to say it was going to be from Portugal, you know, like Spain adjacent.
All right. So Emily, you're up with the questions today.
It's my turn. I'm so excited. This was your first time reading it, right?
It was. Yes. I had known about certain plot points due to a YouTube video that I had watched of somebody like sort of going over it. So I sort of knew generally how the plot went and like the differences that were going to be expected. But in general, this was my first experience learning all about Edith and Beau. And their love story.
So normally we're both rereading something together. This is, although neither one of us read Midnight Sun. So that one was totally new to both of us. This time I have read this before. You have not. It's also not from our childhood because it only came out a couple years ago, but it pertains to Twilight. So we're doing it anyway. So one of us always prepares our questions and prompts and the other one has to answer on the spot. Like Sarah said, it was my turn. I was really excited to come up with the questions for this. So I guess you don't have any memories of reading it for the first time since this was your first time.
No, this was my first time. I can give you my like first like impressions of it.
Yes, do it.
There were parts. Okay. My first takeaway is that Edith is so thirsty for Beau throughout this entire book. It was shocking. The second part was that I actually thoroughly enjoyed getting like a slightly different perspective. Mm-hmm. And, I'm sort of caught between where there were times where scenes were verbatim from Twilight, where I was like, this doesn't feel different enough for me to believe that like Edith is a different person. Mm-hmm. But then there were other times where I was like, okay, no, I can totally get it. I kind of like Edith. I came away kind of liking Beau. I thought Beau was like kind of cool.
I agree with pretty much everything you just said. I will say the first time I read it, all I could focus on was just like my anger. Okay. Cause she basically wrote this book because everyone's always like, Twilight is so sexist. And she was like, no, this story still holds up even when the vampire is a girl and the human is a man. So reading it the first time around, all I could focus on were the parts of the story that she changed in a way that made it like even more sexist. Like these like little background moments.
Some of the changes were a little weird. Like where like the basketball instead of the volleyball thing. I was like, wait, like
there were all these little things. And I'm like,
guys,
you didn't have
play volleyball.
To change that.
You didn't have to change that. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And then her trying so hard. The one thing that I never forgot from the first time I read it was when they were giving the original description of Royals, aka Rosalie, and his freaking man bun, but it wasn't girly. It was like really manly. Like, it was just really annoying. The second time through, we love the man bun. Second time through, I was able to enjoy it a lot more. I think it also helps that I read it after reading Midnight Sun, which I just like thoroughly hated with every cell in my being. And this was back to the normal early Twilight. The book was an acceptable length. It didn't have 700 pages.
Yes, even though this one was longer than Twilight.
It's like a little longer. A
little bit, couple hours, it's okay.
But it felt more like the pure silly fun of Twilight, you know? So I really enjoyed it a lot more this time around, I think. Also, normally with our Twilight books, we do a check-in for Team Jacob versus Team Edward. I really don't know that applies because in this book, Jules is like 14. So that's gross.
Yeah. And she has like no role in this. I feel like in Twilight, you do definitely get a sense that like Jacob definitely has a crush on Bella, but like, I didn't really feel that.
Yeah.
This time around between Jules and Beau, it was just kind of like,
it wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Which I kind of appreciated. I don't know if I put it in my notes or not, but I was like, it would have really grossed me out to have to watch Beau flirting with a much younger girl.
Yeah.
That would have freaked me out. That scene when he's trying to get the story. Yeah. So I was okay with it. So there really isn't a Team Jules here. It's really just all about Edith. Okay. So let's jump in. I have a lot of thoughts. Okay. So I think it's really important that there's like the foreword of this book, right? Where Stephanie's like, let me just like explain some shit about what's going on here. I love that the first thing she does is apologize for this book not being Midnight Sun, because this came out before Midnight Sun was published and people were pissed if we were going to get Twilight content and it was not going to be Midnight Sun. The fans rioted. But it's okay, honestly, because Midnight Sun was shit. But then she like goes into all of these bullets, kind of like explaining things. And I really laughed. The one bullet. Okay. 70% of the changes I made were because I was allowed to do a new editing run 10 years later. I got to fix almost every word that has bothered me since the book was printed, and it was glorious. To me, that reads like there isn't a single issue with this book. It is perfect. She fixed all of the grammar and spelling, which she did not. So I really feel like she was getting our hopes up a little too high that we were about to read a book that was perfection. But we all know Stephanie isn't capable of that.
I mean, I just have to say though that like, you know, I mean, she does have a specific writing style. Like that's always been true. Like all authors have that. But there were moments where I did catch certain lines that I knew were different. They stood out and I was like, oh, she changed that. And I actually found that while I listened to the audiobook for this one. I actually found it really interesting to sort of stumble upon what she changed. You know, I thought that was really interesting to sort of just be like, oh, I wonder why she decided to change that detail or like that phrasing, you know, stuff like that, where certain things were like, I'm assuming you have a question about the meadow at some point, right?
I don't know.
At the beginning of, I know for sure that at the beginning of the meadow scene in the original Twilight, there is a line as that chapter starts that says, Edward in the Sun was shocking. And that was not in this book.
Oh, interesting. I don't know that I really noticed that. But now I'm curious about how that chapter started,
because there was also she also took the details that we had spoken about in the Brie Tanner of vampires looking like they were on fire in the sun and slipped it into this book.
Oh, I noticed that too. I also just want you to know that this entire conversation, I will likely be referring to every character by both of their names, because in the beginning, it was really hard for me to remember who was who because there's just so many characters.
I know. And also like, I was wondering about that in the original version, because I feel like I never had trouble remembering who was who in Twilight, but for some reason, like in this version, it it felt like the introduction of the Cullens felt like a lot.
And the first day at school, meeting all of the normal humans, they're the ones that are harder for me to remember, honestly.
Yeah.
So I like wrote down a cheat sheet for myself. So I really want to talk about their names really quickly. So Bella, her name is now Bo, which is a fine name until we learn that Bo is short for Beaufort, which is horrifying. Edward becomes Edith, which there was the one thing that bugged me about it was that they spelled it really stupid. And then it was like 20 pages in is when the first time Bo sees her name written down. And he's like, oh, I'd been spelling it wrong in my head. So when she's first introduced, it's spelled normal, E-D-I-T-H. And then he sees it written down and he's like, oh, it's E-D-Y-T-H-E that fits her. And I'm like, what is the point of this? Like, there's literally no point. That it's just making it harder for me to remember who it's who. And Jacob becomes Julie, but she's not really that important. So we don't really, we're not going to really talk about her anymore. So then we have the rest of the Carlisles. The rest of the Collins. Alice becomes Archie. That's the one name that felt kind of like a stretch, honestly. So many of these names are close. I feel like the human names were a lot closer. Anyway, Emmett becomes Eleanor. Jasper becomes...
I didn't like Eleanor as Emmett.
You didn't?
No.
I think I was thinking that Eleanor was Edward, honestly, in my head.
She could have done Amelia. She could have done Emmeline. She could have done like...
Emily, my name?
Emily, yeah.
There's so many options here. Jasper became Jessamine. I don't like hate it, but I don't love it. I feel like it could have just been like Jasmine would have been such like a more natural.
Oh, that would have been great. Yeah.
Name. I don't know. Rosalie becoming royal is like the dumbest thing ever. In my head, I remembered it as Roman. Like I thought her name was Roman.
Oh, that would have been good.
In this book.
Roman would have been
still
good.
Like unique, but like who is named royal? I don't know a single person named royal.
So it's, here's the thing is like royal specifically. I'm like, okay, it fits Rosalie specifically, but like not,
it does, but not really royal.
Like, you know, but what really got me was at some point Emmett calls her Roy. And I was like, no, absolutely.
What's not. Wrong with that? That's my grandfather's name.
No, but that doesn't fit like Rosalie's version of, you know, I don't know.
But Roy, I was about to say that Roy would have been a better name choice for the time period that she came from.
Yeah.
Royal, okay, is fair. Horse crap. But like Roy, Rosalie was in what, like the 30s, 40s?
Yeah, that sounds right.
I think my grandfather was born in the 30s and his name is Roy. So anyway, that's the worst name, honestly. Esme became Ernest. I think it's not like a great counterpart to Esme, but it does seem to fit really well because we always talk about like her open and honest and loving face. And I think Ernest is like a really great name to capture that.
Yeah.
And I honestly don't know how to pronounce Carlisle's new name. Is it Karen? Is it Kareen?
So in the audiobook, they pronounce it Kareen.
Okay. I think I was saying Kareen in my head for the majority of the book. And then earlier today when I was finishing it up, I was like, wait, is it Kareen or is it Karen or Karen? You know, like there were so many variations it could have been. Okay. Kareen. I feel better now. And then so the human names I feel were a lot better. Mike became Michaela. I think it could have been Michelle maybe, but Michaela felt good. Jessica became Jeremy and Angela became Alan. I will say, I feel like Jessica, Jeremy lost their whole character, like their whole personality. Like Jessica being this like stupid, silly, obsessed with boys and looks. And I feel like she didn't know how to translate that into a teenage boy.
Yeah, a lot of weird. The human guys felt like, or the human... Flat. Girls turned guys felt kind of weird. Like there was definitely a different dynamic there. And also like, you know, cause I'm pretty sure if I'm remembering correctly, like in Twilight, like Jessica is always like, oh my God, give me all the details about your date, blah, 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 blah. And then like Jeremy's like, oh, how far did you get? Like,
yeah, it was blah, like, that was blah, the blah. Only was way like, she could think of, oh, so annoying.
Yeah. And like, but what was interesting was I felt like the dynamic of you know, all of the girls having a crush on Bo actually worked a little bit better in this version. Uh-huh. It made a little bit more sense.
I would agree. Okay. I just looked down at my notes and the underneath, like going through everyone's names. And the first note I have is the description of Royals Man Bun being the worst. So stupid. And the spelling of Edith was the next one. Yeah, we got through those before we even dove into my notes here. Okay. So my first real note then. Let's talk about Bo's personality and the fact that he doesn't have one. In the like foreword, Stephanie said when she changed Bella to Bo, Bo was way less angry than Bella. Bella always had a chip on her shoulder and she was pissed off. But that was really like the entirety of her personality in the early days. And so when she stripped the anger away, like there really wasn't anything left except her random decision to make him OCD, which I'm putting in quotations because
I didn't get that from this book at all.
There was like one moment where he was like organizing something. And I was like, you don't understand OCD as an actual mental disorder. You don't know anything about it. You're one of those people that's like, oh, I like to organize things. So I'm OCD, which is some bullshit because people don't understand OCD because everyone just like
it's uses so much it as more an
adjective.
That.
It's not an like, adjective. Like, no. Anyway, yeah. That's a whole rant. But he's just a very bland person. I don't know, but I feel like what you said is true, that it's way more, I feel like it's way more likely in a real high school when a guy is the new guy at school for all the girls to have a crush. When there's a new girl at school, if she's not like the hottest thing ever, she just gets ignored. Like that's just how it is. I've been that. So I feel like it did feel more real. And also the fact that this dance is a girl's choice dance. And this time it was actually girls asking a guy instead of in Twilight when it was a girl's choice dance, but all the guys are breaking the rules and asking her anyway, which just like never made any sense to me.
Like from what you just said, where like, you know, Bella was a lot angrier than Bo, like, because in the beginning of Twilight, Bella complains all the time. I don't think she's very nice. She's not really someone I would want to hang out with.
Definitely not.
Bo, I would probably like get along with, I feel like.
Yeah, I feel like in a friend group,
he'd
be like a chill guy in the group, but like, would you ever hang out with him one-on-one? Probably not, because you don't know anything about him or what he likes. But like, if I was a Cullen and he was also a Cullen, that would be fine. He could be in the fam.
And you know what? You know, we wouldn't be close. Though, is because she also had to change the fact that like, you know, because there's that scene in Twilight because Bella like is such an original female character and likes to read classics.
That's in my notes.
And yet Bo, I guess, can't like classics as much, or there just aren't enough classic books that have the name Edith in it to have that moment where Bella gets frustrated when she's reading all the old Jane Austen stuff and finds all the Edwards and the Edmonds and stuff.
But the problem is he still likes classics. He just doesn't like Jane Austen because only girls like Jane Austen. That was one of the things that she changed. And I was like, you're trying to make a point with this book about it being not sexist, but all of these little changes are like internalized, like patriarchal expectations. Like in high school, in my AP Lit class, one of the first books we read was Pride and Prejudice, or it was one of our summer reading books. And when school started, we all had to like pick one. And then we got put in groups with everyone else who picked it to do a project. I picked Pride and Prejudice. And I was the only girl in my group. It was a bunch of other dudes and me. Guys can enjoy Jane Austen. Bo could have been reading Jane Austen. There was no reason to change it to 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, except that she probably thought that sounded more manly, like, cause it's about a boat or whatever. I don't even know what it's about. Anyway, just like one of the many things that she did in this book that really was like going against her goal here. Like Bo could have just been reading freaking Pride and Prejudice. It's not a big deal. Anyway, this has nothing to do with versus Twilight. This is just something I realized when I was reading this. So Mike/Michaela is like, we're all going to the beach this weekend. We're meeting up at my family's store and we're going to drive together. There's like 9 people piled into a car when they leave the store to drive to the beach. And the beach is only 15 minutes away. You don't have to carpool. 15 minutes. Like, why didn't you just meet at the beach?
Well, eco-friendly.
It's not going to be that big of an impact to drive 15 minutes. And the fact that they were willing to like cram more people into the car than there were seatbelts, if that would have required the beach to have been like at least an hour away to make carpooling have been worth it. That was just a random thing I was thinking about. That's fair. So, okay. So this is kind of a theme as I was reading. As I was reading, I was like getting ahead of myself because I couldn't really remember much about the first read because the first time I was just annoyed. So this time through, I kept thinking, oh, I wonder how this gender swap is going to affect XYZ. So I was reading and I had a note and I was like, ooh, note to self. I wonder how this affects the werewolves of the of Jacob/Julie's tribe. And then of course we get an explanation. But this is one of the many things for the explanation doesn't really make sense to me. So Bo meets Julie and gets her to tell him all the stories about wolves and the cold ones. So since the genders are all swapped, the tribe is now matriarchal. So all of the werewolves are women. In the original series, Leah was the only female werewolf and she was barren. Like she wasn't able to have children. And so she couldn't pass the gene down. So if we're not changing the rules of the society, how are we passing the werewolf gene down if all of the wolves are female and can't have children?
Maybe Stephanie Meyer just hates Leah.
Maybe she just really hates Leah.
But that's such a good point. And I didn't pick up on that because there was a moment where I was like, oh, this is really cool. I would love to like see the pack dynamic be like all female because that's really cool. But you're right. In the original series, she was just like, nah, fuck the women. Like they can't have kids. They're not worthy enough to pass on this gene. You know, it's annoying.
Yeah. I would like to put an asterisk on that, but I think it was a super cool move to make the tribe matriarchal and all the werewolves be women. I'm making this point to point out one of the 7,000 flaws in Stephanie Meyer's writing. I do like the change. I just wish there had been an explanation behind it.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a callback to one of my questions. Okay. I don't remember which episode it was in, but do you remember me talking about their hair and their hair never grows, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So there was some point when we're meeting Edith earlier on and they are like, they're very pointed about the fact that she never wears makeup and she's still the most beautiful girl ever. So I was thinking about how she's not wearing any makeup, which led me to thinking about her eyebrows. If eyebrows also never grow back, they have lived through many, many decades and many different trends. In my head, I was like, do you think Edith and Eleanor plucked their eyebrows down to little sperms in the 90s, early 2000s. And then what happened when the trends changed and thicker eyebrows were back in trend, they're stuck with sperms for the rest of their life. Or do you think they just didn't care?
I love that thought. That's amazing. Good question. But I think they just like, don't even care about like, I don't think they would care enough to be like, oh, let me change my eyebrows. The real question is, what was the trend when they got changed into vampires?
You're right.
And whether or not that still looks good. Now, the thing is that if they so chose, yeah, they could totally spend time filling in their brows with, you know, makeup nowadays. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. Because if Edith is a redhead, our eyebrows don't exist if there's no makeup on them.
I'm a fake redhead. I wouldn't know.
As someone who is a natural redhead, if I don't fill in my brows and I don't wear mascara, it looks like I don't have eyebrows or eyelashes. I would assume, so if I was a vampire, that's what I would be using makeup for. If I didn't wear anything else because I was so perfect.
You would still put it on your eyebrows.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Just think, you could wear as much makeup as you want and you would never break out.
You're, oh, man,
a dream. I didn't
even think about that. Never having, what happens? Okay. I'm going to backtrack. I was about to say, but what if you had really bad acne when you were changed? I feel like that would be part of the like healed, make yourself beautiful.
But then
even though Stephanie
Myers, what bothers me. That's what bothers me. Like with this whole process of like them, like not looking like themselves, but like looking enough like themselves, but also like pregnant women will still be pregnant if they're vampires. Like, I don't, what's
them?
Where is the line here?
There is no line because Stephanie Meyer just like made shit up on the spot and didn't think about it.
I mean, yeah. Cause also we'll Alice's hair is like all short and spiky because it isn't going to grow back. And it was like, you know, so why is that? That's, I don't know.
Nobody knows. Okay. Here's the one nice thing I'm going to get. Well, I'll say a couple nice things. This is the nicest thing I'm going to say. In this book, when Beau was listening to Linkin Park, she changed the description from noisy to heavy. I forgive her for all of the horrible things that she did in Twilight and Midnight Sun. She did Linkin Park so dirty, but she made up for it by changing the adjective to heavy because that is accurate. Thank you, Stephanie. Okay. Let's talk about the first like major change we have. So Beau goes to Port Angeles with the bros. Instead of going shopping, they're going to buy
they're buying corsages.
Corsages. And again, I was like, why couldn't they just be shopping for a suit? A lot of teenage guys
that would have been don't such have a good suits. Idea. Oh man.
But boys don't like shopping. That was a missed
opportunity. I mean, they would have had to go anyway.
Yes. So dumb. Anyway, okay, so we get to Port Angeles. He splits off from the group to find a bookstore, just like Bella. And then the bad guys is very different.
Yeah.
So in Twilight, it's a group of like gross, creepy dudes who want to like kidnap and sexually assault her and kill her. Mm-hmm. In this, it's just like bad guys. And there's a callback to like when he first arrived in Port Angeles, he ran into them in the airport and accidentally hit one of them with his bag and then was like, oh, I'm sorry, bro. And then they were like, what's wrong with you? And they wanted to start a fight, but then his dad was there in his cop uniform. And so then they didn't do anything. And of all the coincidences, in this random alley in Port Angeles are the same people from the airport and the rest of their little gang of criminals.
And they just happen to remember this random guy that they just
remember to
run into.
But not only that, they think he's the cop. And I'm like, I'm sorry. A 17-year-old boy does not look like an adult.
Well, unless not, that 17-year-old boy is like a pro athlete. 17-year-old boy who, yeah, I was just about to say, who doesn't play sports.
Not athletic at all. Just like
hangs around the house, reads, and cooks.
No one is going to look at a 17-year-old kid like that and think that's a grown man.
No.
They're not going to look like a grown man for several years. They very much still look like a child. I know Hollywood confuses people because they cast people in their 20s to play 17-year-olds all the time. But a true 17-year-old boy, nobody would ever mistake him for a cop. I mean, they think he's a like, cop because they saw Charlie in uniform.
I know at least so like two people that have looked like definitely over 18, like in high school at some point, just from like facial hair, like totally get it. Uh-huh. But specifically Beau, no way.
Absolutely not. So like if they happen to remember him and they happen to remember seeing Charlie in a uniform and remembered he's a cop. So they see Beau and they're like, that's an undercover cop. And then they decide to murder him. Like he sees them in an alley. He thinks they're doing sketchy things, but he doesn't actually see them doing anything illegal. And they jump to the conclusion that A, he's a cop, and B, we gotta kill him now. There was so much.
That'll get you into less trouble.
Yeah. Let's just murder the cop. It'll be fine. Anyway, Edith shows up in the trusty Volvo. Saves Beau and they go on their dinner date. So
can we also talk about how boys can't get dinner together apparently?
You're right, because that's, you know, no homo.
Boys, go out to dinner with your friends. It's fun. You'll have a great time. Please.
We love going
go out to dinner with your friends.
It's great. So, okay. So they go on their date and Edith picks up the check and Bo is all huffy about it. And he's like, you didn't eat anything. And she makes some comment, antiquated gender roles, blah, blah, blah. And then he pointedly ignores what she's saying to run past her to open the door to make a point that he does like gender roles, I guess. It just read so weird. Like, you didn't have to make a big deal about him opening a door for her. I identify as a woman and I open doors for men every day. Like, he could have just been like, you're right. Thanks for buying me dinner. Then the next sentence is, Bo opens the door and they leave the restaurant. Like, they made this, again, she was trying to make a point about gender roles here. And then she made it worse with Bo's reaction. Like, Stephanie, I really need Stephanie to take like a gender studies class, honestly.
Yeah, I think so. Not a bad idea, honestly.
Yeah. Okay. So my next note all falls back on what we were kind of talking about earlier, where Stephanie just like doesn't know how to talk, how to write teenage boys. Like, she just can't do it. Everything felt weird. Jeremy, aka Jessica, is like interrogating him about his date, and all he cares about is how far he got with Edith. And then we also see Mike / Michaela approach Bo, and Bo is basically trying to be like, you really should ask out Jeremy, like, you're taking him to the dance, he likes you. And one thing that really jumped out at me is that Bo kept saying man code. Dude, it's called the bro code. That's a thing. Everybody calls it the bro code and Bo's calling it the man code because Stephanie is stupid and doesn't know how to write from the point of view of boys that aren't paranormal, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
That whole day I was,
that's a good point. I didn't catch that, but yeah.
I just was like really on this tangent of, I think
one of the reasons why I feel like I would only buy it if like it was Bo trying to be like cool and then getting like the
getting made fun of
the term wrong. Yeah.
Yes. Moving along. Okay, here's another change. This one was the funniest change to me. So in Twilight, we have Tyler thinking he's taking Bella to prom because of some offhanded comment. And then they never really talk about it again until the end of the book when he shows up to pick her up for prom after she's already left. In this story, it is very different because Bo finds out that the new one, Taylor is going around telling everyone they're going to prom together. And Bo is trying to like let her down easy and make Lauren / Logan hate him less because they have a crush on Taylor. And he gives this big old dramatic performance in front of all their friends and is like, you're just using me to make Logan jealous and I can't do this anymore. And makes Taylor think she's like hot shit and then goes off after Logan. And I just like died laughing at sweet, awkward little Bo with no personality, just like deciding to give a dramatic monologue in front of everyone at school.
Honestly, I respect him so much for this, but mostly yes. Because Bella could never. Like Bella, Bella has done many things. Like she's capable of like being awful to her dad so she can leave and save him from a vampire. She, you know, can drop everything and go to Italy and do all this shit. But Bella could never give this theatrical monologue in front of the entire school. She would die from embarrassment first. Like, she really would never.
It was just a funny addition. I liked that. Okay, so then we have the scene in biology class. In the original Twilight and also in Midnight Sun, young 16-year-old Emily reading Twilight did not really pick up on the fact that she was trying to describe sexual tension.
It's, you know what, but it's not even that. It's like, yes, but also like the scene as it's written in the original is very confusing. Like,
right. Okay, brought they did it a up terrible
when
job.
When we went over Twilight the first time, I was like, what do you think is happening here? Because It has made no sense to me since 2008.
This version made it very clear that what was happening was some sexual tension.
Yes.
That is one edit she made that really did help.
There is so much more sexual tension in this book.
The thirsty.
Edith is so thirsty for Beau.
Honestly, Beau's thirsty too, though.
Yes. I mean, that's true. But like, I feel like Edward's all like, no, like we have to wait until marriage. And I feel like Edith
and probably Edith's like, I'm going to jump your bones. If it wouldn't kill you, we'd already be in the bedroom.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about your favorite character, Rosalie, AKA Royal. So in the original series, Rosalie hates Bella because Bella wants to become a vampire, talks about it all the time. And Rosalie wishes she was still human so that she could have had children. Royal, on the other hand, has no real reason here. They just say he didn't ever want to be a vampire. Well, at this point, Beau didn't tell anyone he wanted to be a vampire either. So there's no reason why he should hate him so much. There's no like motivation. There was one mention in the very end when Beau was being transitioning into a vampire and they were all telling their stories. They made some comment about how he had younger siblings that he was really close to. That's it. I really don't know why Royal would be acting the same way that Rosalie acted without those motivating factors there. And yes, Royal maybe still really wanted kids one day, like just because he's a man doesn't mean he doesn't want kids, but they didn't say that.
Right. So. And also the fact that like, cause originally we find out that like Rosalie's pissed because Edward's putting everybody at risk, you know, telling Bella, and she's like, how the fuck could you? And then it's like, how are you interested in this person, but you weren't interested in me, even though I never really wanted you to be interested in me. I just like, am annoyed that like, like I wasn't good enough for you, even though I didn't really want you. And I just wanted you to like, find me attractive anyway. And then we sort of find out as time goes on that it's like, you know, she's like, why do you want to be a vampire? You're a fucking idiot. Like, I hate you because you're not grateful for anything you have. With Royal, it's like, I can understand if he was like pissed for like the same first reason of like Edith spilling the beans. But I feel like what Bella is like, right away, as soon as she finds out that Edward's a vampire, she's like, I want to be a vampire. We're going to be together forever. I felt like with Beau, it wasn't really that intense right away.
I feel like it kind of was.
Like, it just felt different. Like, I feel like Beau probably would have had more of a conversation about becoming a vampire. While Bella was like, no, we don't need to have a conversation. I already know what I want.
Yeah. I have some notes, some more notes about some of the other characters' backstory is changing as well. But Rosalie's was kind of like the big one for me that just felt like it didn't have an answer here. Once again, here we are at a moment where I don't think Stephanie knew how to write this scene from a male's perspective. So we're going to the meadow, we're going to go hiking, and we're stripping off our layers, and he sees Edith in like a wife beater, basically. Bella's reaction to seeing Edward mostly unclothed was to be so sad because she would never measure up to him. I totally understand that reaction coming from a female character. Beau had the exact same reaction to seeing Edith half naked. And that makes no sense to me coming from a male character. Obviously, like, males can still have feelings of inadequacy, but like the male gaze is a thing. And I feel like his reaction would have been more like, damn, Edith looks good. Let's go on a hike. And there was none of that. It was just immediately, oh, never ending depression because you're gorgeous and I'm so hideous next to you. And I was like, this is one of the moments you should have changed, but didn't. And it felt weird coming from a male character to me. Speaking of how thirsty they are, Beau and Edith's sex Bella talk Edith, in the meadow.
Give it to us.
I would read that. Beau and Edith's sex talk in the meadow compared to Bella and Edward's sex talk in the meadow. Bella and Edward were like blushy, stumbling around it. And Beau and Edith had a much more healthy, just like a really great open dialogue about sex and whether or not it was a possibility for them. So they just felt way more mature to me when they were having the sex talk. Whereas like Bella was just like, oh, sex, I can't talk about it.
Edith also just feels like she's like, Edith feels like she's more willing to break the rules than Edward is. You know, like Edward's whole thing was like, I have to protect your soul and we have to wait until after marriage. And, you know, Edith, like, I feel like doesn't, like, she's a little bit more with the times.
In this book,
you know? Okay, but if we want to talk about gender, what does that say about the overarching message that, like, Edward's very concerned with Bella's virginity, but Edith doesn't care about Beau's at all?
Honestly, I think I like Edith better than Edward. Or I'm going to take that back. Twilight Edward sucks ass. He got so much better by the end of the series.
Yeah, he did. Yes.
I feel like Edith second is starting half eclipse out.
Edward.
Yes.
Perfect.
Edith is already second half eclipse Edward. She is starting out like fully actualized where Edward didn't, you know?
I would agree.
So maybe that's why I like Edith, which is very interesting because the more I talk about this, the more I realize I really like Edith's version of Edward.
Yeah,
I agree. I don't like Bella at all anyway, so it's hard to say whether or not I like Beau or not. He just, again, just kind of feels like he doesn't have much of a personality, so.
Yeah.
Okay, and again, then my next note is about a change. So, the tracker shows up, they're going on the run, and they have to go back and put on a performance for Charlie. Bella doing it in Twilight just never really felt believable to me. Her being like, I do like this boy and I have to leave. It didn't like land right to me. It never made sense. Her whole speech. Like, I feel like Bella only got out the door because she pulled the line from Renee. Right. Beau's speech, on the other hand, I feel like was worded in a way that it just made so much more sense. Like, he specifically said, I like her and she wants to stay in this small town and have a bunch of babies and I got to get out before I get sucked in, you know?
Yep.
Bella didn't do a great job of explaining that. She never said, oh, Edward wants to stay in a small town forever. Beau's performance just overall for Charlie, I feel like just made way more sense.
Yeah, I agree.
So that was rewritten in a really great way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we talked about Rosalie versus Royal. Let's talk about Jasper versus Jessamine. So Jasper was a Confederate soldier. Obviously, Jessamine could not be a soldier because female.
You're right. I didn't think about that.
Okay. So this is one of the ones where I got a little ahead of myself, where I already had a whole note written out by the time we got a little bit of information about it. So she couldn't have been in the military. So I really want to know what she was doing instead. And how she was like using that gift, because they said that Jasper like shot through the ranks of the military because he was great at influencing everyone around him. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. The only bit of information we get about Jessamine is that she was kidnapped basically by the Maria character and joins this vampire army. So we don't know anything about what she was doing before she joined the vampire group in Mexico and why she already had these natural talents. Was it random? Like, who knows? It was very confusing. And it felt like a cop-out when they're in the hotel room and Beau was like trying to ask about her story. And she's like, you're not ready to hear that story. And I was like, Stephanie, you just didn't know how to tell it. Like,
she didn't figure it out. That's such a good point. I didn't think about that. And now I really want a backstory of Jessamine and like, especially because like if she's badass enough to work with like newborns just like Jasper did, like that sounds fucking amazing and
I want to know about
and that. It makes the character a little bit more okay to love since we know that
she wasn't a Confederate soldier.
Was not a Confederate soldier.
Yes. I feel like this is giving me permission to like Jessamine, where I had to like secretly love Jasper. Here is once again, a stupid change because sexism. So Beau recognizes the ballet studio from Archie's sketch not because he was a former student of the dance studio.
Because boys can't do ballet.
Because his mom taught there once briefly. I don't know if Stephanie Meyer knows this, but there are professional ballet dancers that have penises. I'm just throwing that out there. Boys do ballet.
Yes.
Like, that's a thing. Bo could have taken a ballet class as a child. That is not impossible. Also, it's doubly annoying to me because you can't just on a whim decide to teach ballet. Renee could not have done that.
Yeah, no. No, no, no. Yeah. Renee would have had to
been a professional dancer. Yeah.
Like, yes.
With teaching experience. Like, anyway.
Yeah.
As a former dancer.
Because honestly, I would have believed that Renee would have enrolled her son into ballet classes.
Yes, she would have.
She would have. She is that kind of like artsy minded person and would have been like, oh, this will be so fun. Like, you know, let's, you know, whatever. Like I could see Renee have taken like adult ballet classes and been like, I'm going to sign both of us up for ballet classes. And we're both going to do it. Like, you know,
yes, that so fits her character.
Yeah.
And yes, we know Bo would have been terrible at it because he's just so clumsy. And that could have been the story. He took one ballet class there for a couple weeks. It did not go well. And he never went back.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay. Now another origin story, Corrine/Carlisle is different. So
it is. It also felt like it went on a lot longer.
I don't know if I got that same impression or not.
Maybe it was just the audiobook.
Maybe it's just the audiobook. Okay, so we're gonna talk about Carlisle and then we're gonna talk about the Volturi too here. So Carlisle's origin story was that his father was a preacher who was hunting down vampires, and he went with him one night and they chased a vampire through the sewers. The vampire attacked Carlisle. And he dragged himself away to slowly change and let everyone think he was killed. Corrine, on the other hand, her dad did go chasing a vampire and then it got away and then followed her dad home and was like, we're going to have to move now because you found where we were hiding. I'm going to turn your daughter into a vampire. Like, I get that in the 1600s, they probably would not have let a woman go on a vampire hunt with them. But it just felt kind of weird.
Yeah, I feel like there could have been a like an easier way to like change it where like maybe like it could have been something where like Corrine's dad like cornered the vampire in public and she just happened to be there. Like, because on a spectacle like that, everyone would have been watching. Like, she could have been, you know, in the line of fire that way. Which I feel like probably would have made a little bit more sense.
Yeah, it was just a weird change to me. Okay, so let's talk about the Volturi changing. So I'm going to pull the foreword back out. In the foreword, Stephanie Meyer said the only people's genders who didn't change were Charlie and Renee. And then also there are a few background characters. The reason for this exception is my misplaced sense of justice for fictional people. There were two characters in the wider Twilight universe who really got the shaft in an ongoing sense. So instead of doing a swap with these characters, I gave them a coup. It adds nothing to the story. It was just me being weird and indulging my neuroses. I don't understand why she chose the Volturi wives here. She says they got the shaft. I don't think they did. They just weren't really mentioned.
They were never mentioned until Breaking Dawn. Yeah, when it was like, oh, even the wives have left.
Yeah.
I also felt like, because I had texted you and I was like, I keep thinking this book is going to end and then it hasn't, right? Like the last like few chapters, I was like, oh, okay, it's going to end here. And then it didn't. And like, we got all of this Volturi information at the end of the book that I felt like came out of nowhere.
Okay. I agree that it felt kind of weird to just have it thrown in there, but I liked it.
Yeah. I would agree with that. It just felt like, why are we getting this now?
Yeah. Okay. So when we first were introduced to them, when we were getting Corrine's backstory, we see the portrait with Corrine and the Volturi, but it's very clearly Marcus and two women. And so when I was reading it, I didn't remember all the details. And so I was like, why would she gender swap Arrow and Caius, but not Marcus? But then when we get to the end, we learn she didn't gender swap any of the Volturi. She gives them this like detailed backstory that Arrow murdered Marcus's wife. And so basically, and Caius was in on it. So Marcus kills his two brothers because fuck them. And then their wives take over. And so it's Marcus and the two wives whose names were Athenodora and Sulpicia. I don't know how to say that.
Sure.
Sulpicia. I don't know. It's Italian. Either way, I thought that was like a cool thing that she did. I don't know why she chose, why she thought the Volturi wives were shafted. I really don't think they were. But her changing that up. And then it was interesting in the afterword, which I'm going to pull up, where she's saying, like, you get to imagine everything that happens next. And there's all these things. And it's like, whether the Volturi led by Sulpicia are more benign and less corrupt. I think so. She's basically saying that if the Volturi were led by women, there wouldn't be any issues, which I love. That was the one thing where I was like, you changed something in a good way that would have had women like a lasting power. Impact. Women in power. It's so great. Yeah. So I thought that was really interesting. It was really random. They just like it was like word vomiting all this information about the Volturi, but I was here for it. You know what I wasn't here for? Was when, so they have the whole confrontation. I have no notes about the confrontation. We're skipping right over that. He gets turned into a vampire and they have a funeral for him because he has to like die. You know, he can't see anyone ever again. And they're sitting in the tree, Bo and Edith, watching his funeral, and they get engaged in the dumbest way. Just so stupid. She's like, talking about all these things Archie has seen and the fact that they're going to get married one day. And he's like, you would marry me? And she's like, are you asking? And he's like, sure. And she's like, yes.
Okay.
Just no.
I have a question though about Bo becoming a vampire.
Yes.
And I might be reading too much into this. I just think it's a fun question to speculate about because gender roles. Edward succeeds at this really tough thing that is like causing him agony throughout this entire first part of this story, right? Mm-hmm. Edith fails.
Uh-huh.
And I think, yes, we can make an argument of like, she was only writing one of these, you know, there wasn't going to be a series of this. So like she wanted to wrap it up. And I thought it was interesting actually to see what would have happened if Edward had failed, but it was not lost on me that the woman failed in this situation.
I love where you're going with this. I hate to burst your bubble. Stephanie changed the timeline. That's why Edith failed. Bo left 5 minutes earlier than Bella.
Did she say that?
In the afterword. Yeah.
Okay. So in the audiobook,
I wouldn't have noticed it.
So in the audiobook,
let me find
the foreword and the afterword were not read. So I did not know that.
Oh, they're so important.
Yeah. They weren't read in the audiobook.
Okay, let me find it.
So then, but at least if there's a reason, I like that better.
Yeah. Okay. Let me just be quick to say the fact that Bo becomes a vampire has nothing at all to do with the fact that he is a boy, not a girl. This change also does not mean that I prefer it to the original or think that the original was wrong. This has always just been the big what if, and I wanted to see what it would feel like if Twilight had been the end of the story. If, like Bo, Bella had left the airport just 5 minutes earlier. Yeah. So they changed the timeline where they're sitting in the airport waiting and watching until the plane is going to arrive. She changed mm-hmm. how much time there was. So Bo left earlier enough that by the time they arrived, the venom was already like pretty significantly in his system and Edith had no chance of saving him. Whereas Edward did have a chance.
I accept that.
I was thinking the same thing until I read the afterword.
Okay. Fair enough.
The thing that I think is the most unnecessary of all this like random information at the end of the book, let me just say, I think the book should have ended at the funeral, but instead there's this whole big to do with the wolves and a confrontation about the treaty and all this extra stuff.
Yep.
We didn't need to see that.
I think part of it was that she wanted to show off like the female werewolves, which is cool. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But there weren't like none of them are like changed. Like there's not like enough of a pack for it to like really.
Yeah, it was so early make on. Make
a difference. That being said, I'm like so interested now though, because remember how Jacob is like so pissed that he like has turned into a werewolf and he's like blaming it on the Cullens. What would the dynamic between Jules and Bo be? Because now Bo has a hand in all of those transformations because he's a vampire now. And that's an interesting dynamic.
In the afterword where Stephanie Meyer was like, imagine all of these things now, because I'm not writing any more of these. And on the list was like, what the dynamic would be like between Bo and Jules? Would they be friends? Because in Twilight and New Moon and Eclipse, like they had such a bigger foundation of their friendship by the time Bella was turned into a vampire. Whereas this one, we only saw them together, what, like two or three times in the whole series. Yeah. The whole book. And yeah, they knew each other when they were like teeny tiny kids, but like, is that enough of a foundation for Jules to like want to go against everything she believes? I don't think it is. So I think that, yeah, obviously one day they would interact because they say Jules will be a werewolf soon. It's only a matter of time. So I think that they would interact in some capacity. I don't think they would be close though.
Yeah, so. No, I agree.
Okay, I just have one note left. The most heartbreaking thing about this whole book is Charlie. Because Bo did his whole act about hating Forks and having to get away and saying the same thing as Renee, and then he dies. He never got to make that right with Charlie.
Charlie deserves better in this entire series, always.
Seeing him at the funeral, I cried. I actually cried. And as I was reading this, I remembered that the ending is different, right? Like this ends with Bo turning into a vampire. He doesn't go back home to Charlie and apologize and make things right. I just kept finding myself like wishing there was something he could have done. Could he have had a letter on his person? Could he have left Charlie a voicemail that's like, I'm so sorry, Dad. I freaked out. I'm on my way home. And then that's when they fake the car accident.
Yeah. Like,
they could have done something to make things better for Charlie, but instead they leave it in like the worst possible way. And that just made me so upset because I love Charlie. Charlie is amazing. And he deserved better than that really shitty ending. Like Renee, I don't really give a shit about as much, but Charlie is like, and the fact that it ended so horribly, I just wish they could have made it better for him somehow.
Yeah.
I don't know. It made me really sad. Well, that's a wrap on Twilight.
It is. We have to do last call.
You're right. Okay. So last call is when we give you our best bad summary of what this book was about. My bad summary: a middle-aged woman attempts to write a book from the point of view of a teenage boy and fails.
Okay. The end. Mine is very average guy manages to fall in love with girl who is completely out of his league and gives up absolutely everything for her.
That's good. That's really good. I'm a fan. 10 out of 10.
So congratulations, guys. You have been with us through the entire Twilight series. What are we reading next, Emily?
Before we jump into that, I really just wanted to say, I didn't know if I was going to make it through rereading Twilight. We should do this at the end of every series. Let's talk about how we feel about the series now that we've reread it as an adult. And then we'll jump into the next thing. Okay. So the last time I read this book series, the entire series, I was 18, 19, maybe, freshman year of college. I read them on spring break. I was like sitting on the beach all day, reading my Twilight books, drinking. It was great. I don't think I realized how problematic the series was then. Did I acknowledge that they weren't great books? Yes. They were like fun trash reading for me. Like I used to describe it as a really fun thing to read where I don't have to use my brain. It was like perfect vacation reads. This time I am 29 years old. And the problematic areas were impossible to ignore, especially now that I am an adult woman, knowing that this was written for young women. It makes me feel a little icky. Do I still like have all the same like love and nostalgia for the series though? Like, absolutely. God forbid I ever had children. Would I want my daughter reading this when she was 16? Probably not. I don't think I would.
Yeah. I think it was genuinely fun to reread all of these books, though we struggled through Midnight Sun.
It took me like 3 weeks to read that book.
You know, Twilight, like, you know, yes, there's a lot of problems in it. There's a lot of things to pick apart. It's one of those things mm-hmm. where it's just really fun to like poke at it and like look at its flaws a little bit. But at the same time, it carries so much nostalgia for me, because mm-hmm. I went to all of the midnight showings. Same. I got to see, I remember when like sides leaked of like the script before the movie came out. Mm-hmm. You know, some of my like really close friends are like friends that I made like through Twilight. And so it has a very special place in my heart and I get very excited about it because I love to love it. And I also love to hate it at the same time.
Yeah. I feel like that's a great, we love to love it. We love to hate it. Yes. I also would like to issue an apology to Stephanie Meyer. I feel like I was really mean to you while we read this. I mean, you probably deserved a lot of it, but I probably could have been a little nicer. Yeah, there's so much nostalgia for these books. I went to 4 out of the 5 midnight premieres with the same friend. And the fourth one, we were in college in different states, like 5 hours apart. And we still drove home to see it together. It was impossible to do for the last one. I was really sad. But yeah, there's just so much like fun memory associated with this series. So, do I think I'm going to reread these ever again? I don't think so. I think this was probably the last time I'll ever pick these books up. But you know what I did do today? Have you heard of The Director's Notebook? It's like a little book that has a bunch of notes from Catherine Hardwicke from the first movie set and like her thoughts when she was like before they started filming. I definitely bought it on Amazon today, was $1.50. So great. I'll read that. I also have a parody book called Nightlight.
I have that too.
I haven't read it yet, but I got that bookstore recently.
A while ago. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have lots of fond memories for this series, but I think I'm probably done with it. I'll keep the books for my entire life though. I'm never giving them up.
No, of course not.
Okay. So we have finished Twilight, yes. Which means we're moving on to the next series. So by the time this comes out, we'll have an Instagram, we'll have social media. We definitely want to know what series y'all want us to read.
Yes.
But we do have a giant list that's probably like 3 years worth of content already. So Sarah, drum roll, please. What is the next book series that we're going to read on our podcast?
It is the series that formed my sense of humor, A Series of Unfortunate Events.
It formed your sense of humor?
Yes, it did.
Prefacing this, I never finished reading these. I think I read like the first 10 or 11 books, but I never got to the end.
Wow.
So I'm really excited to read these. They were the first thing when we started talking about planning this podcast and we started making our list, I went to the used bookstore here in Nashville a million times. And the first book series I went after was Series of Unfortunate Events. I can't wait to talk about memories for this series because I blame a small portion of my mental illness on my fifth grade teacher in relation to this book series. And that's your teaser for the first episode of Series of Unfortunate Events.
So make in sure real you life, tune in to the next episode. Yeah. So we'll see you guys next time. First round's on us.
Rewind is written and produced by Sarah Jones-Dittmeyer and Emily Cavender. It's edited by Sarah Jones-Dittmeyer. Music is by Mark Schwedo. Find us on TikTok at Rewind Podcast or on Instagram at Rewind_podcast.